In this episode, we speak with Marcello Gigliani, managing partner of Apax Digital, where he is focused on growth equity investments in the software, internet, and technology-enabled services areas. He serves as a member of the Apax Digital Fund Investment Committee and the Apax Inclusion and Diversity Council. Apax Digital partners with exceptional founders and leadership teams of innovative SaaS, internet, and tech-enabled services companies worldwide to unlock their maximum potential. The firm has 35 years of tech investing experience and typically invests $50 to $200 million per partnership. Marcello joined Apax in 1999 and co-founded Apax Digital in 2017. He has led a number of Apax Fund's digital deals, including Accurate Background, Boats Group, Dealer.com, Idealista, Metametrics, Solita, So Young, Trader Corporation, and Wiseline. I'm your host, RJ Lumba. We hope you enjoy the show. If you like the episode, click the subscribe.
RJ Lumba is the managing partner of Growth Cap and the executive chairman of Market Insight Media. He is the host of Growth Investor, a podcast featuring today's best investors, executives, and founders. In the minutes ahead, we'll uncover insights and strategies for accelerating growth and succeeding in business.
Marcello, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Apax, the name is very well known in the private equity world. It has been well known for a long time. Apax Digital, one could assume what you focus on, but could you tell us a little bit more about the nuance between Apax Digital and Apax?
Sure. No, happy to. So as you may have heard, Apax has been around for some time. It's one of the largest and one of the oldest investment groups in the world. Been around for about 50 years. Started originally as a venture capital firm. And Alan Patricoff, the original founder of the business, is really one of the fathers of venture capital in the US. He built a business which continued to grow and then eventually partnered with some folks on the European side who built out a venture capital business in Europe, which eventually grew to become more of a growth equity player and eventually a private equity firm, which eventually consolidated and became what Apax is today, which is a multi-class provider of funds for investing in growth stage and larger businesses across growth equity, across global buyouts, across credit, across impact funds. As Apax was growing over the years, we stopped doing venture capital and focused primarily on growth equity. And the more we grew within growth equity, we were able to raise larger and larger funds, which took us really into the buyout world. What that meant was the firm raised more capital, invested in larger deals, and had to be disciplined to limit writing smaller checks into what historically had been the sweet spot for the fund. I've been with the firm for about 24 years. Actually, tomorrow will be my 24-year anniversary, starting my 25th year, and really grew up through that venture to growth and growth to buyout transition. While it made sense for the firm to expand into the larger end of the buyout world, we still had great connectivity and growth. And that meant that we kept on seeing good opportunities, connecting with them, and feeling like we could actually bring real value to these companies. But yet we had to pass on them because the equity tickets got to be too small. So about 7 years ago, and after banging our head against the wall from having to pass on so many of these opportunities that would have been really attractive, we decided that we really had room to play here with a dedicated fund and a dedicated team that focused exclusively on growth, but did it within the broader Apax platform, which would allow us to not only have a tailor-made solution, but really punch above our weight. And so about 7 years ago, we decided to launch what is today Apax Digital. At that point, I stopped investing for our global buyout fund and partnered with Dan O'Keefe, who we brought over from TCV. He was a general partner at TCV for some years. And then the two of us began to build out a strategy, hire a team, and raise a fund. Today, we're investing our second fund, which is a $2 billion fund. Our first fund was a $1 billion fund that's fully invested. And what we do is look to invest in the best growth stage technology companies, wherever they might be in the world. It's a global fund, and we look to find companies to do both minority deals as well as growth buyouts, where we can help these companies go farther faster.
Now, you've seen a lot in your career. I'm sure you're familiar with a lot of other firms in the growth space and how they're going about their business, where they're focusing, how they add value. Could you describe to us how Apax Digital might compare to other firms and maybe how you're different in some ways?
Yeah, so we are very focused on quality and growth, and that really drives everything we do. We're looking for high quality companies in certain subsectors that we understand, that we've prioritized over the years, and that we can go narrow and deep within. And then we look to help accelerate those companies on their growth journey through what we would describe as more active investment. And that takes the form of, on the one side, what I would put in the camp of more traditional pattern recognition, which allows us to drive value through the boardroom, but also beyond the boardroom in certain ways, involving M&A, international expansion, strategic repositioning, some leveraging of prior experiences to bring to the table. But then, very importantly, we also have a very deep operating team, which allows us to roll up our sleeves and help in ways which are much more focused on the day-to-day operational tactical improvements. We've built a team of about 30 people, which is our operational excellence practice. It's now become the largest group within our firm. And it's one which allows us to bring skills that companies that are growth stage companies may not have that ready access to, and do it in a way which really removes any barrier to take up. So we never charge for any of this. We never push this on anyone. It's very much done on a pull basis. And what we've built is an operating team that looks and feels different to the way many of our peers have done it, in the sense that we don't have any entrepreneur in residence. We don't have any retired CEO. We don't have any consultant. We have people who are deep technologists that we've brought into the Apex family over the last 15 years because they're the best and the brightest at what they do. And it's very specific things, like people that are focused on SEO or online customer acquisition or pricing optimization or Salesforce effectiveness or talent management. And we have a couple of dozen areas of expertise where we've built these practices, which we make available to the companies that we partner with. That combination of that subsector focus, that transformational approach to growth, and that operating value add is really what we think sets us apart as a growth equity firm, which is leveraging the scale of one of the largest global investing groups out there, which gives us the additional ability to punch above our weight in areas like group purchasing, helping companies expand internationally, allowing companies that are at the growth stage to see what the larger companies in their space are thinking, what they're doing, how they're acting as it relates to growth, to investments, to M&A, and taking those learnings and being able to quickly share those best practices down to growth stage companies as well.
I'd like to head into your background a bit. I noticed on your bio, what rings prominent is that it sounds like you moved around quite a bit as you were growing up. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience and how that maybe played into current roles and how you kind of approach life?
Sure. It's actually a topic which I'm very passionate about because it has been my life since I was 5 years old. I'm originally from Argentina. I was born in Buenos Aires and left when I was five because of my father's job. He was an expat, and that meant that we started bouncing around the world. And every 2, 3, 4 years, we would find ourselves going from one city, one location, one country to another. And yet today I'm almost 49 years old, and that really hasn't stopped. And I think it's partly because it's something which I enjoy and it's something which has really made me who I am, but partly because I think that's where the world is going and that's where the opportunities are. We have been seeing the effects of globalization, internationalization, the value of understanding cultures, on, you know, speaking languages, expanding beyond your boundaries, not only on a personal level, but also obviously on a professional one. And that's really been a bit of the driving force for me. I grew up partly in Argentina, partly in the US, partly in Spain, spent some time in the UK. It's really been through that experience and through those stages, which I've been able to develop as a person and as an investor, and have now been based in New York for the last 15 years. Fell in love with the city and certainly the place that I call home today.
You know, are there certain parts of the world where you think the evolution of the earlier stage companies, growth stage companies, is really interesting from that digital and tech standpoint?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So if you look today, never before has it been so easy for companies to go beyond geographic barriers, go beyond a certain market. Digital companies, by definition, are ones which are much more nimble, much more able to expand. And we really look for those. We invest in certain subsegments which are especially prone to that. If you think of things like vertical SaaS, or if you think of data and analytics, AI businesses, very easy to establish a value proposition that resonates in one place and expand those into others. There are other categories that we look for, businesses which can create really strong competitive moats within certain locations, within certain markets, because in that case, geography does allow for there to be winner takes most dynamics within them. One good example of that is digital marketplaces. This is a category we've been investing in for probably now 13, 14 years. And it's a space where when you have established incumbents that benefit from network effects, it becomes really hard to displace them. So their international expansion is less obvious. So by understanding a little bit about the way companies can globalize or industries can see that as an accelerator or sometimes a barrier, it allows us to really fine tune how we think about investing in some of these companies.
Mm-hmm. And where do you spend most of your time helping to lead Apex Digital? How do you kind of divide up your resources?
I'd say I probably spend about a third of my time focusing on companies within the portfolio and being an active board member and always in contact with the CEOs of the companies that we're invested in. Probably spend another third of my time in due diligence on opportunities that are currently active in the market. And then the balance is spent with companies that we are developing relationships, deal sourcing, and then just general management of the fund, leadership of the team, and investor relations.
And do you find that you're spending most of your time in the US?
I'd say it's about 50-50. I do spend a significant amount of time in the US. It's where I'm based, but we do operate the fund as a global firm. The fund is a global fund. It's what we've messaged to our LPs and what we've been delivering on is a geographic diversification of where our capital is going. It's been about 45% invested in the US, about 38-40% invested in Europe, and the balance invested in Asia. That's more or less the type of breakdown that we want to continue seeing going forward. So that does mean that I do spend a significant amount of my time overseas as well. Europe is a very important market for us. We have a team, an Apex Digital team, that's based in New York and one that's based in London. We operate very closely together, often collaborate on deal teams across both offices. And that does bring me overseas quite a bit.
You know, something that's kind of a common topic in the private capital universe is inclusion and diversity. And I noticed that you're kind of part of this effort and initiative within Apex. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I am. And this is something which is incredibly important to us as a firm and also something which is important to me, you know, personally. We have been for many years looking to be one of the companies that's trying to right a lot of the wrongs in our space. And in general, the finance world, the investing world has not been good at promoting and ensuring diversity. And I'm not just talking about gender diversity. I'm talking also about racial, and I'm talking about ethnic, and I'm talking about socioeconomic. And that's something which we have been trying to be at the forefront of for a number of years. We have a steering committee for inclusion and diversity initiatives, which I'm a member of, and we are constantly looking to make a dent in that. We've been initially focused on gender diversity as a priority for us. Within Apex Digital now, over 30% of our investing team are women, which is still not where we wanted to get to. We wanted to get much closer to parity, but we're seeing some very healthy progress, and we're proud of some of the initiatives that are going on there. And the same goes for the broader firm. The broader Apex has gender diversity as one of its key priorities and seeing some very healthy progress. We're also very focused on ethnic, socioeconomic, and actually some of the organizations that we're involved with, both from a recruiting side, but also from a community involvement side, are very much focused on those areas.
Do you think that stems from your founders? You know, I know Alan Patrickoff has been very involved in various initiatives that point to social impact.
Absolutely. So Alan has been a real force of nature in general when it comes to setting the tone and driving innovation and advance within the space that we operate in. But it's not just Alan. You know, we look at Ronald Cohen, who was until recently really the driving force of Apex's international expansion. Ronald is one of the leading voices in impact investing as well. And it's because so much of who Apex is, so much of our history, which is really tied to not being a purely returns-driven investment organization. We very much want to deliver the best returns for our investors. We've consistently operated in the top quartile, but we very much prioritize doing good as well as doing well. And it's codified into our values. It's something which is really underpinning everything we do.
That's an interesting topic. And I frequently discuss this with folks is there's certain firms that will almost do anything to deliver returns. And, you know, sometimes that delves into, well, is this actually an ethical course that we're taking? Other firms have done extremely well in holding the line. So how do you kind of think about that, you know, as you go about your business? How do you ensure that you're in balance?
Yeah, that's a great question. We're a very values-driven investing firm. And actually the first value, which everybody in the firm can recite to you by heart, is that we choose right over easy. And it sounds like a very basic thing, which everyone can agree with. In practice, it's regular that we come across situations where we need to remind ourselves of the importance of choosing right over easy. Integrity powers everything we do. It's how we think about investing, how we think about building our team, how we think about behaving, you know, really in every aspect of what we do. And we're faced with these types of decisions where oftentimes the right decision is the hardest decision. And we need to, you know, be very disciplined and brutal when it comes to that. One of the ways we do this is through regularly, openly discussing the most complex situations with everyone in the team. When we hire new people that join us, they go through a fairly structured training program where there are several important technical skills that we want people to take on, but also we want them to really understand our culture and we want them to really understand what's expected of them. And one of the things that we really drill in on people is that they have the obligation to dissent. It's not the right to dissent, it's the obligation to dissent. And that applies to everything, especially things where there might be a moral question, an ethical question, something which may not be the easiest decision to make because it's more complex. We want them to always know what side of things they need to be on.
And along this vein, do you also find that you're better aligned with certain LPs than others who are actually values oriented, that maybe have similar values as Apex?
I think so. Although we've been seeing over the last few years, because many of our LPs, the majority of our LPs are large institutional investors, sovereign wealth funds, pension plans, they run very professional organizations and they already are very much prioritizing investors that have strong values, that operate with a certain code. And for sure, there's great alignment there. And it becomes something which takes up a significant amount of the time that we spend with our investors is talking through all of these initiatives, which we're putting in place in order to ensure the right approach, the right controls, but also the right moral, ethical, impact-driven approach to what we do.
And with everything you do professionally with Apex Digital, what is the most exciting aspect to your job?
I've been doing this, as I mentioned, now starting my 25th year. And before that, I was in consulting for a few years. So I often joke that I've never had a real job. And part of that is because I often need to pinch myself. I think I have the best job in the world. You know, we get to spend our day speaking with, eventually partnering with, and helping grow some of the most attractive, exciting businesses on the planet. And we get to do that every day. And we get to do that with a team of people, which is the best in the industry, which we've built over the last 7-8 years. Starting from scratch and being able to be incredibly systematic and thoughtful and rigorous in terms of the type of culture we wanted to build and the people that we wanted to have within it. And we're out there delivering strong returns to our investors. So all of that is a long-winded way of saying that I just think everything I do is so much fun. And I hope to continue being able to do it with this team as long as I can.
Excellent. Well, we're coming up on time. I have two final questions that I ask every guest. One is, can you tell us about a person who has had a big impact on you?
Well, professionally, there's a number of people, including some former bosses, some current partners. But if I think about who has had the most impact on me as a person, it really isn't one person. It's two, and it's my mother and father. And this might be a bit of a cop-out answer, but I really think of it as the combination of the two into one person. My father has always been very focused on instilling in me and my siblings a very strong sense of responsibility, a very strong work ethic. My mother was the perfect balance to that through a very intense focus on creativity and on pursuing your passion. And it's really the combination of the two, which I think has defined my approach and who I am. My mother has really been the person that has pushed us to dream. My father's been the person that's given us some of the tools to pursue those dreams. And then in the process, remembering that we need to enjoy that journey. So I'd say both of them have been the real inspirations.
Last question. Can you tell us about a cause, charity, or other endeavor that you're passionate about?
Sure. Again, I think we need to pick our spots in general, just like we pick our spots in investing. I think we need to pick our spots when it comes to charitable activities. On a personal level, my family and I are immigrants. As I mentioned earlier, I've become an immigrant from the age of 5 and have become an immigrant in several different countries. Since we've been in the U.S., we've obviously noticed and very much recognized that we were very fortunate as immigrants to be able to land here and have a number of opportunities that most immigrants don't have. So we've been very involved with a number of organizations that are all about immigrant integration, giving them the right starting point to be able to be successful in their new beginnings. And everybody from my wife, who's very involved on several boards of these companies, through down to my children, who have all been volunteering at them for a number of years. That's been a key area of focus. On a professional level, we are massive believers in the power of entrepreneurship and the importance of education to promote that entrepreneurship, especially in communities and in groups where that might not be so readily visible, so readily available. We've been partners with a wonderful organization based out of New York called Build NYC for now, I guess, the last 7 years, since 2017. And we support Build in their mission to use entrepreneurship to really ignite the potential of youth in underserved communities, especially in the New York City area. We do that through exposing high school students to business, to entrepreneurship, through both classroom programming as well as a number of supplemental programming materials, seminars, lectures, being able to come in and shadow people in the workplace, both within investing groups as well as within startups. And that ultimately results in these teams of Build students going through a process of a new startup creation, which we support those teams through along the way. And then eventually that results in a competition where we're involved in order to be able to not only provide our feedback and support, but ideally even help some of those ideas become a reality. So that's something which we've been very active in. We primarily partner with BETA, Bronx Engineering and Technology, which is a wonderful school that we've now been able to have the privilege of mentoring and supporting a little over 45, 46 students over their journeys and continue to go deeper and deeper with.
That's fantastic. And we'll share the link in our show notes so others can learn about the organization. Marcelo, I want to thank you so much for taking the time. I know our audience will find this very insightful.
Thanks, RJ. It's been a pleasure.